introduction to what I'll be talking about, Eve mentioned that foundations are increasingly outcome-oriented, and I'll be speaking today about how and why the Summit Foundation, which is a family foundation based here in Washington, D.C., work to gain a better understanding of a global goal of how to define and measure the outcome or the goal of universal access to reproductive health, particularly in regard to young people. First, let me say a few words about the Summit Foundation. Roger and Vicki Sant created the foundation in 1991, and its mission has always been to promote the health and well-being of the planet, its people, and its natural environment by achieving a sustainable global population and protecting the Earth's biodiversity. And to achieve our mission, the foundation focuses its grant making on empowering young people and protecting the Mesoamerican coral reef. We make about $4 million in grants annually for this work. This is not an insubstantial amount, but we do recognize that given our rather lofty mission, $4 million in itself is not going to achieve a healthy and sustainable planet. So to ensure the most effective and most powerful use of our funds, the foundation has always sought to leverage its impact by working in partnership with and seeking the support of other donors. And more precisely, we have undergone a very considered process over the past few years to define, focus, and measure our work. And our search to measure progress stems from a core question that our co-founder, Roger Sant, has asked throughout his life and his business career, which is, what does success look like? The first process of focusing and defining that we undertook was with our conservation program. The Mesoamerican Reef is the largest barrier reef in the Atlantic Ocean. It stretches over 400 miles along the coast of Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula, Belize, Guatemala, and northern Honduras, and well over 1 million people depend on this resource for their livelihoods. The Foundation's long-term goal in this area is to ensure that the Mesoamerican Reef thrives as a healthy, productive ecosystem capable of supporting vibrant economies, nurturing healthy communities, and providing abundant marine resources for generations to come. But we found, after establishing this goal, that there was no definition of a healthy reef. No one knew what a healthy reef should look like or how to tell if progress was being made toward this goal. So the foundation has worked with grantees and other partners over the past several years to establish a practical definition of reef health and to identify indicators to evaluate ecosystem changes over time. That's that wireless delay. There we go. This process led to the Healthy Reefs for Healthy People initiative, which was an international, multi-institutional effort that tracks the health of the reef, the human choices that shape it, and our progress in ensuring its long-term resiliency and sustainability. To date, the initiative has identified 58 indicators of ecological and social well-being, providing threshold values where available to assess improvement or deterioration of specific conditions over time. This rather complex information has been condensed into a handbook, which is now available online in both English and Spanish, and a list of the top 20 indicators is also now available. Well, let's move on now to the other program, the focus of today's presentation. In 2005, the foundation reviewed its population and youth leadership program and came to a new goal, which was universal access by young people to comprehensive sexual and reproductive health information and services. This goal, you may recognize, stemmed from the global consensus that was achieved at the International Conference on Population and Development in Cairo in 1994, which had as its main goal universal access to reproductive health. Universal access to reproductive health, five seemingly simple words to which an international community of governments, organizations, and individuals has referred as the basis for increasing attention to sexual and reproductive health and funding for sexual and reproductive health for the past 13 years. Yet, we found that while these groups had been working diligently toward this goal of universal access, no one had yet defined what universal access meant. There was no agreement on precisely what this term meant. So starting with NGOs in the reproductive health arena and working our way through academia and to the largest international health agencies, we ask the questions, how does one define universal access? How will we know if we're making progress toward this goal? And most importantly for us, what would success look like if we got there? Time and again, we were surprised by the lack of an adequate response. Until just recently, no one had yet even sought to define or measure universal access to reproductive health, no less what it meant for young people. We did find in the course of our inquiry that two separate yet similar processes were just beginning to get underway. The World Health Organization's Child and Adolescent Health Unit was working to measure coverage of young people to HIV services in the health system, which was close but not quite the comprehensive definition we were looking to assess. And the UN Population Fund, fresh off its success in getting universal access to reproductive health as a measure or target for the Millennium Development Goals, was pairing up with yet another unit of WHO to define and measure this new target. This was an enormous first step, but unfortunately young people were not at the core of what they were doing. I'll come back to these two processes later. Summit was determined to ensure attention at the global level to this critical population, young people, and we were convinced that a better understanding of countries' progress toward the goal would encourage greater advancement toward it, and not to mention the honest and very important truth that being able to measure progress would satisfy our own board that things were moving in the right direction and that their investments were indeed paying off. So we continued to pursue a definition and measures for our goal. We knew that there were a wide range of indicators that were being collected in various places, and we also knew that experts within and outside the UN system were, like us, eager to see a more comprehensive definition of access by young people than either WHO or UNFPA's exercises would seemingly provide. But we weren't quite patient enough to wait out the UN system in coming to their definition. So we invited a group of experts on both measurement and youth reproductive health, representatives from multilateral agencies, non-governmental organizations, philanthropy, and academia, to participate in a meeting last December to work this out. Our belief was that by taking the discussion outside the confines and constraints of the UN system and keeping everyone focused on the big picture, we could find a consensus. It just couldn't be that hard, we thought. As a start, we provided the group with a set of indicators of youth health that were already being collected, places like the Demographic and Health Surveys, WHO's Statistical Information Service, UNESCO, and we then set to work through a facilitated session at the Ford Foundation in New York, and I should note that Meg Green was one of our expert participants on that panel, and Leslie Cantor, who's sitting in the audience, was our expert facilitator. Both were very helpful in this process. At the end of just one day, the expert group came to agreement around a set of indicators that are already being collected and that would provide a reasonable proxy for access by young people. And this is an important point. We didn't want to get tied up in defining access by affordability, availability, acceptability, contact, and effectiveness along the lines of the Ta-Nehisi framework that WHO is using. We wanted to keep it simple, and we agreed that proxies would be sufficient. The group also identified gaps in the data, noting, for example, that sexual and reproductive health information for young people under 15 is rarely collected, noting that existing data aren't appropriately disaggregated, and also that various important contextual factors that affect sexual and reproductive health, such as some of the ones listed here, could not be easily quantified. In the end, we decided that while we await the collection and encourage the collection of this additional information, we could still agree on an interim definition and measures. So here's that interim definition. At the global level, universal access may be defined as having been met when all young people in need of sexual and reproductive health information and services have access to them. But since even simple processes can't be that simple, the group further noted that specific measures and percentages to define this goal may be inappropriate at the country level, as countries face vastly different circumstances in regard to youth sexual and reproductive health. Thus, whenever possible, country and community-specific data should be used to determine appropriate objectives for universal access. And at the same time, countries should look to set specific targets or measures for particularly underserved populations, such as married girls, out-of-school youth, indigenous or ethnic minority youth, and others who may have unique challenges related to sexual and reproductive health. So with this chapeau, the following indicators were identified as the best available measures for young people's access to comprehensive sexual and reproductive health information and services. And again, these indicators primarily address antecedents and outcomes, so they're considered proxies. And you'll see these full definitions here. Apologies for all the words on the slide. They are condom use, HIV testing behavior, adolescent fertility rate, adolescent contraceptive prevalence rate, and these four, I should note, along with indicator 8, which I'll get to, are part of WHO's current data collection efforts, which I will come back to in a bit. And then contraceptive knowledge, HIV prevention knowledge, skilled birth attendance, antenatal care, median age at marriage for females, the difference in the age of marriage, which we included as a rough indicator for gender equity, recognizing that we wanted to have a gender equity measure, but there really aren't many that exist, so this is the best we could come up with. Median age at first intercourse and the percent of young people enrolled in secondary school, recognizing the connections between education and reproductive health that are well established. Indicators of things like school-based sexuality education and youth-friendly health services, we know, would provide a more complete sense of access, but they also are unfortunately not being collected for most countries. So as they become available, we will seek to incorporate those. We've since collected these data, and giving equal weight to each of the indicators, we ranked countries in terms of how well they're doing in regard to these proxy variables. And you'll see here there are 42 countries on this list. One of the problems that we encountered is that very few countries have information available for all 12 indicators. In fact, very few have them for 8 or 9 or 10 indicators. So we included those that had at least 7 of the indicators in these rankings. And while I'm showing here just the rankings, we do have baseline figures for 186 countries against which we can track progress in the future. Again, these 186 countries, for the most part, have 6 or less indicators available. So it's not ideal, but it's a start. We've gotten our first answers, and we got there in a whole lot less time than it's taken the UN to get there. So let me go back to that issue and to the leveraging part of our discussion today. While our expert group meeting was not part of the official UNFPA and WHO processes, the key people leading these efforts for both agencies were active participants in our meeting and our discussions, and the agreements that we reached have already influenced and advanced the cause of young people in their dialogues. In March of this year, WHO and UNFPA held a technical consultation on indicators in response to the Millennium Development Goals accepting universal access to reproductive health as a target. In that consultation, they agreed to use several more indicators of youth sexual and reproductive health than they had originally anticipated using. And their recommendations, I'm happy to say, were approved by the UN General Assembly in September. And WHO's Child and Adolescent Health Unit is in the process of publishing its indicators for access by young people, and I'm again pleased to say that with Summit's support, they have expanded this effort to include not only indicators for HIV, but also ones for improving sexual and reproductive health more broadly. And those indicators, and I can tease you with a draft, it's hopefully being finalized this very week, those are being published, and WHO plans to disseminate these to its country and regional offices to begin collecting measures of access at those levels. As I mentioned earlier, we share 5 indicators with WHO. The main differences between our 12 and their 16 are that they include several indicators for which data are not yet available, such as the availability of youth-friendly health services. And they also include many indicators focused on the most at-risk young people in regard to HIV infection, including commercial sex workers and men who have sex with men. For us, these are key outcomes. With the help of these international agencies, we now have at Summit a set of indicators that we can use internally to see whether the world is advancing toward our goal of universal access. But more importantly, by asking questions and by offering an opportunity for these groups to step back from the formality and bureaucracy of the UN system and to think about these issues in a more simplified manner, Summit, this small family foundation, has been able to help these large multilateral organizations further prioritize youth as a key element of measuring progress toward a global consensus goal. Summit comes out of this process armed with the confidence that one small actor can play an important role in helping larger ones to advance a shared global agenda. Leveraging can happen and it can make a difference. And at the same time, we're also reminded through this process how challenging it is to measure progress and impact in grant-making programs. Whether seeking ecosystem health or human health, it's critical for both funders and grantees to be able to understand, articulate, and measure their stated goals. At Summit, we continue to recognize that many of our efforts and the organizations we support are achieving successes along the way. And we know that these groups and these actions will have long-term impacts. But notwithstanding these achievements, we will continue to press all of our grantees to answer the key question, what does success look like? For all of us, success as agents of social change hinges on not losing sight of this ultimate vision.